Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems, too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Eric Shapiro. David North Martino. John Copenhaver. And Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles.
102.3 FM Riverside.
And 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Dave Martino is back.
I am back. Back for the attack. Back to the Big Mac attack. Back to the Big Mac attack.
I'm telling you, this is the way you make your living, okay?
Okay.
Just think about it. You know, we're talking about this guy who's got into the Guinness World Record book for having over 70,000 Big Macs. And he ate 720 plus last year. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know? So we've got to get you doing this. You're going to be going up against him, but you're going to be doing Wendy's.
Wendy's, okay.
You're going to do the Wendy's burger. That's at least two a day you have to do.
Okay.
That's just because you need to do over 700 a year, okay? And we're going to get you in the world record. Now, of course, you won't be able to walk, probably.
They'll roll me into the world record.
Yeah. We're going to give up on that. But we don't care about that, right? That doesn't matter. It's about being in the Guinness record book. Just think of how proud you can be. You can go and tell your parents, look what I did.
Look at me.
Yeah. You know, you'd be like Kim Kardashian. You'll be having a big, you know, surge.
That's right.
Enough of that silliness. Anyway, so now we've got an author with us today. His latest book will be called An American Tragedy. So, Mr. Dan Flanagan, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. Oh,
it's a pleasure. Now, if I remember right, now you were a lawyer.
Were and still are, still sort of hanging on.
What would make a lawyer want to write books? Like, why would you get into this crazy world of book writing?
I would turn it around and say, what would make a writer want to be a lawyer? But
that's true.
Writer was the thing I wanted to do from the time I was in high school, and didn't get around to it for decades later, but it all worked out like it was supposed to, so I'm happy about it.
Well, that's good. So, how much of your legal experience in life in law do you think goes into your books?
My main work as a lawyer has been in the financial arena. Which has gotten me involved, not as a perpetrator, but in a lot of scams and fraudulent stuff and financial crises and bankruptcy and those sorts of things. And that has informed the books in some way. However, a lot of parts of the books, and this latest one especially, has involved criminal law. And I was not a criminal lawyer, so I've had to really work hard and get my colleagues to help me on some things about that part of it.
This is book four, right, in the series, and Peter O'Keefe is who's the series based on, and he's a private eye, basically. So how did you create that character?
I wanted to write. I conceived this thing when I was in my mid-30s. And I wanted to write a kind of coming-of-age redemption sort of story, including about recovery from addiction. And I thought, you know, it would be much more interesting if I could put this in the detective mystery crime format. and try to do the same thing, but make it more interesting, even exciting. And I wanted to make the character do something more interesting than being a lawyer, so private detective, and also wanted to do that to sort of distance myself from it and try to push off the autobiographical stuff and not have the character just be a version of me.
I mean, because, yeah, lawyers are boring, right? You've got to have bring in private detective, some excitement going on, you know. Now, you base your stories in the 80s as well, right? So that's the time period we're talking about. So what's the premise of this story that you've done with American Tragedy?
The series, the notion behind the series is to take this character and those in his orbit, you know, family, colleagues, friends, people added as the books go along, and bring them up as close to the present day as I can, trying to get involved with the major issues of our times, really. This one is about the satanic and moral panic of the 1980s, if that's something you recognize or remember in any way, when there was a huge outbreak of not only suspected Satanists and sometimes mixed up with all kinds of daycare, prosecutions of daycare people and preschool people, teachers and so on, for alleged sexual abuse. And many, many, many trials, many innocent people put in jail. And later, many of those convictions overturned, but was a real trying time in our history.
Yeah, I remember a lot of that. It's especially the schools and the daycares and stuff and all the different charges and then a lot of them not being true. And what I remember most is things like Geraldo Rivera and people like that doing these, you know, daytime talk shows with a lot of that kind of talking about satanic and all of the influence it had on stuff. So was there particular stories or news events that you focused in on that you used as a premise, or?
Yeah, I really tried to stay away from the actual real stories, although, you know, you pick up a lot about how things worked from those. By the way, though, on Geraldo, I have a whole chapter on his famous show on that, and it's a critical part of the plot of the book. But in other respects, it is not, you know, a Roman, a Clay sort of thing that's actual people. In fact, I put it in O'Keefe's world by having the accused teacher be his daughter's former preschool teacher, who's her favorite teacher ever. And he's very reluctant to get involved. Her lawyers ask him to become the investigator on the case. He's trying to build his own private detective practice. He's just emerged from a whole struggle with the mafia and other people trying to kill him. And so here he is getting sucked into this very controversial lynch mob atmosphere situation. But she begs him to help, and he does.
It's an interesting time period, for sure. With this whole thing going on and satanic panic, and you've got this with preschool and all that. And is there a subtext or a meaning that you had underneath the storyline itself, or even if it came out organically, was there something that you wanted people to take away from, let's say, this book?
Well, yes. I will say this. There's some real connections with things going on today, QAnon, for example. But at the same time, it's not just picking on that, because this was a result of a lot of strange bedfellows, liberal, conservative, and just all kinds of different people who sort of went off the rails. In many cases, thinking they were doing the best thing in the world, but weren't. So it's really about, you know, Voltaire's comment, if we believe absurdities, we shall commit atrocities. Or Louis Brandeis saying the greatest danger is men of zeal are fanatical but don't really understand things. So the tragic hero in this tragedy is America.
Well, this seems to continue, you know, whether it's satanic panic from the 80s or whatever it is today or in the 90s. Or there's always some sort of thing that a group of people will be attracted to that think it's leading us to the end of the world, and it doesn't, but it causes a lot of trouble, you know, a lot of unrest during the event. So I don't know if we ever really learn from stuff.
I think you're right.
We always center on something. So, but how do you feel your character? How does O'Keefe, as a character, as a person, as a being, how do you feel how do you write this character, and do you hear him, see him, feel him? Do you have a dialogue? Is it like watching a movie, or is it inanimate? Like, what's your experience when you write a main character?
I do try to make the novels scenic in the sense of could easily be translated into film or TV or whatever, and the individual scenes to be scenic in that sense. This character started out in the first book as really sort of a mess. The first three books are really about his evolution into a more, as he would say, more useful person. Now, in this book, he's really downright heroic. I don't know what I'm going to do next. I got to complicate him a little more, but that's his arc, if you will. Now what we're seeing is somebody who's gotten through most of their problems and is trying to do good in the world. What the Hebrew saying, tikkun olam, repairing, helping to heal the world.
Well, how much liberty do you take with your PI character and what they can do in the real world? Do you have to kind of go beyond the scope of what PIs usually do to make the plot work? Or are you able to just follow along with what they can do legally working, not really alongside law enforcement, but kind of in the background?
And there are law enforcement characters throughout the books that he interacts with at various times. What I try to do is ground it in the actual PI business as it works, and with this guy's, this probably pays more attention to the actual business of being a private detective than most private detective books do. But that's the grounding. You got to take it somewhat beyond there and make it a little more exciting. Although this particular book is not, I hope they're all realistic, but this one is very much could happen anywhere, anytime.
In writing a series like this, how do you keep track of your characters or people and how they change over books? Because now you're in book four, and if you continue this, do you have some sort of a record of that or a Bible or something that you kind of keep as a reference?
I've told myself that I need to do that, and I've caught myself a couple times forgetting some critical aspect of a character and catching myself and having to deal with it. So if I'm going to go forward with this, which I intend to, I'm going to have to do some kind of Bible to make sure, you know, just basically the background of each character so that I don't get anybody mixed up or doing something they couldn't be doing for one reason or another.
Yeah, you know, their eye color changes or something, or, you know. So how do you get into Satanic Panic? Like, what brought you there, and how do you reference that? Like, do you know people that are Satanists or something, or no?
No, it's purely just what I'm trying to do. It's funny about this series that wants to get clear up to the present day, and I'm in the fourth book, and I'm not out of 1988 yet. But I just try to look at what was going on at the time and see if I can make that realistically intersect with this character and the people in his orbit, and have both something that's going on in the society and that you can make sense out of in the lives of these people, as it intersects with it. And I just accidentally, in sort of reading back what was going on in the 80s, I just fell down a rabbit hole. I think it was a podcast or something that started me out in it. You know, I think all of us kind of remember the McMartin case out in Manhattan Beach, California, which was the big case in all this. But, you know, at the time, you know, I was doing something else or not really focusing on what was going on, but it was sort of a plague around the country. And so once I got into that, I could make it fit pretty well with the O'Keefe character. Although, and I'm hoping I can do this with the rest of the series. There are a couple of other characters in here, one of which gets more time in the book than O'Keefe does, the lawyer for the defense in the case. So I don't feel I have to focus solely on him, the main character.
Well, did that happen organically, having another character take more of the space within the book? Did the character surprise you in becoming more prominent?
Yeah, two things happen. One, you say organically. Yes, the story can demand it, really. For example, an investigator in a criminal defense case just isn't positioned to be right in the middle of everything like the defense lawyer is. So that just took me there. And then also what happens is you end up writing a really interesting character. I've got a character that was in the last book on Lonesome Roads named Pascal McKenna, who's a newspaper reporter, a journalist. And the guy's just interesting. And so I kept him up and continued him into this deal. And he's very prominent. And I hope I can continue to do that. As O'Keefe's daughter grows up, you know, she was significant in the last book. She had her own subplot and her own sort of adventure. So some of it is trying to make the story more interesting. Some of it is because the story itself dictates that, and then sometimes you just get to like a character so much you don't want to leave them.
How do you get into the mindset of writing a female character, such as like the daughter, O'Keefe's daughter and stuff, and when they go through a lot of challenges and stuff? Do you have some sort of a technique to that?
No, it's like jumping out of an airplane hoping your parachute's going to work. I'm very doubtful about that all the time, but my daughter, now my adult daughter, you know, she reads this all the way through. I have various female beta readers that would keep me straight on it and so on, but I'm very afraid, I shouldn't say afraid, I guess, careful and worried about getting it right.
Yeah, that's one of those things. And action, violence, and things like that, would it be like a hardcore detective, or is it, are you conscious of how you write, how much violence or murder or action is going to be in it?
Yeah, if you'd look at the arc of the books, you'd see less violence as it's gone along. In the first book, he's carrying around an M16 and grenades and everything else. In this last book, he doesn't even carry a firearm. So I don't know where all that will eventually go, but the levels of violence, hopefully not though the levels of suspense or threatened violence or possible violence, have not disappeared or haven't lost that edge.
And the bad guy, the evil characters, the ones that are doing bad things. Do you like writing those characters?
Yes. I'm against this whole development of making villains into heroes, the Breaking Bad type of thing. But they certainly can be complicated and interesting. And I enjoyed working with the mafia guys. who are not in this book, but were in the first three. And then I've got one villain who went to jail the last time that, I haven't brought him back yet, but I'm going to, and he's just a rotten human being.
I think a lot of it with the evil character, the bad person, is trying to, describe or see how they see things, like so that the reader understands where they're coming from, and that makes them a good evil character in the sense, not that they're good, but then they're understandable even though they're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, in quotes, villains in this book that are absolutely believing that they're doing the right thing, you know. I would say there's a lot of complications on the negative side of the characters in this particular book.
Are you conscious of the reader? Like when you're writing the manuscript, are you thinking about what the reader's going to think when you write certain areas? Like, are they sitting over your shoulder, so to speak?
Yes, even though I'm not exactly sure who that reader is, you know, or what they make up, but very definitely I'm thinking about that all the time, of what impact it's going to have, positive or negative, especially believable or not believable, authentic or not authentic. So, yes.
I'd imagine writing these subjects, you know, some of them you've lived during the time, of course, and all that. But when you get into detail about some of these subjects, like this Satanic Panic, for instance, you probably learn a lot of things in more detail and stuff. And you come out of it and you get the book finished. Do you think it changes you, the process, when you learn all these things about what goes on in the world around us and what happened in this time?
Yes, I'm not sure I can say how, but I feel very much changed by this particular book. But I'm not sure exactly how. I don't know if I can add anything to that.
Yeah, well, it's tough. You know, it's tough to look. It's still pretty soon, right? But it's kind of something you'll probably see more in time, you know. And plus, it's got to make you a better writer too, right? You know, the research. How much research did it take to do something like this?
Well, in this case, I did a tremendous amount. Lots of nonfiction works, lots of cases. There's so many decided cases by the appellate courts and so on. So many newspaper articles written at the time and those sorts of things. So it was a lot. Plus, I had to get all this book is mostly trial, which is really hard to write in an interesting way. And if you think about some of the famous trial books, there isn't that much trial in them. Take To Kill a Mockingbird. You know, there's a great trial scene, but that's it, basically. Or not, you know, a couple. And so I had to do a lot of just simple research on the law of evidence and so on. And I ended up getting a major... one of the major criminal defense guys in the country to review the book, so I didn't go astray. But so this one took a lot, and it's funny because I finished the previous book on Lonesome Roads in April 2022, and I got into this one. I said, "Hell, I can write this book by October." Well, I just got it done. It was hard to plot it, and it was hard to write it and rewrite it. I really feel good about it, but it was a struggle.
Right. Yeah. It's always that way, you know. Now, so each book, a person can read them separately. They can start with this book and go back if they want. Are you thinking about the series as you write it? Did you kind of know ahead of time, like when you were writing book one, that you were going to do several books, or is it just kind of
The components of the first three books, not all of it, because I had a core of what I wanted to happen to this guy, but all the other elements that make a book interesting, you know, weren't there, and I had to create them. This book, though, I just grabbed a hold of me. The first three books, in a way, are a trilogy. They're standalones, but it's like one problem leads to another that is worked out in the next book. And so I have things that I want to do in the future books, but right now I'm struggling to figure out what I'm going to do because, for example, I would like to do something on the growth of right-wing terrorism, the militia movement, and all that, that leading ultimately to the Oklahoma City bombing. But the important thing, though, is how do I take that and make that intersect meaningfully and realistically with the lives of these characters? That's the hard part.
It's getting them into that scenario, true case.
In a way that somebody can believe.
Yeah, yeah. It's got to sound reasonable and fit in and work with the story. Yeah. That's always the toughest, you know. How do you choose which kind of scenario you want to do? Like, for instance, the Satanic Vatican, now you're saying the Oklahoma City bombing and stuff. Because there's been a lot of events in the 80s and 90s you can choose from. Is it just feeling then that makes you kind of go with something?
Yeah, I have things in my mind, and then I'll confess, I have true crime on like music. And a lot of those shows are about things that happened in the 80s and 90s. So they really provide a lot of kind of fodder for stuff like this. But it's really hard to take. If I was writing a cop book, those things would, you know, just feed it like crazy. But this isn't, you know, a police procedural, so it doesn't fit very well. So how do you get a private detective involved in some of these things that where a policeman would be, but not? So I know things I want to do. I know I want to do something on the militia. I want to do something on not necessarily 80s, 90s, but the whole foster care system and these kids ending up on these farms and kind of prison farm situations and so on. You know, kind of an Oliver Twist type thing and a few things like that, but I don't know that I'll get there. You know, I don't know that I'll be able to to fit the pieces together right.
Well, you know, there are big projects to take on too, right? A lot of research and stuff in that. You could always have sub-characters, like characters that aren't the main ones in some of these books, take off on their own, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If they fit the category, if they could fit into that storyline, you know what I mean? If they could be somehow involved in what's going on, you could always draw it in that way.
Yeah, yeah, and that's kind of happened in some ways already.
So listen, so what is it you hope people take away from the books and any of them in the series or anything you've written? What is it? Do you look for something that you want people to take away?
I think mainly things like the corrosive effects of power, all kinds of power, and the misuse of it, and people struggling with problems that they create that are imposed on them or whatever, and dealing with it, and how things can get out of control and maybe get back in control, things like that. This one thing O'Keefe's trying to do, he's made a lot of mistakes, walked away from his family when he was younger. He's trying to put it back together again. He hadn't got it done yet. That may never get it done. People dealing with various forms of addiction, and then themes kind of emerge. I find myself dealing with the whole development of what I'll call the surveillance society. You know, everything from wiretaps to, you know, people taping each other to everything else like that. That's some of the things that I'm trying to do, although they tend to be situational. A given situation, a given plot, the themes may emerge from that somewhere.
Well, and you had some experience. I guess you guys did the you and your wife have founded and run a alcohol and drug treatment center in Tucson, if I'm right.
Yes, yes, yes. That was a great experience.
Well, I'd imagine you could draw a lot from that experience. Well, anyway, so this is amazing. So the book's everywhere. Now, do you have a website and do you do social media that people can interact with you?
Yeah, the website's Dan Flanagan Books, and it's Flanigan, a little strange there. And social media, I do some, but probably not very well. But I do send out a newsletter every once in a while, and you can sign up for that through the website. The website does really try to lay out all the different books, which are not just a series. I've got a book of poetry, a book of short fiction, and so on.
We'll find you, and we'll get it up on our website so people can find it easily, as well as your books and everything else. So I appreciate you being here. It's just it's fantastic. The new book coming out is called An American Tragedy, and it's a Peter O'Keefe detective series. It's book 4. So the author, Dan Flanagan's been our guest. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Dan.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.